Hi, and welcome to episode one of Fear the Swan, a Signar-centric podcast. My name is Grant.
I'm Gibbs.
I'm Cole.
And this is, as I alluded to, going to be a Signar-focused podcast. There was one rolling around a little while ago that kind of unfortunately died out. So we had the idea of grabbing the Signar players we knew. We all have a chat, love talking Signar, and kind of wanted to get another one out there. So before we get into who we are, I just wanted to run through a couple things. First, I wanted to thank our buddy Pete Ceretti for designing our logos, and to Anthony Gibbs on the cast for doing our intro and outro music. It is fantastic.
All right, thanks. And we all were fans of the Storm Chamber, so
yes.
You know, hoping those guys, you know, after a hiatus, hit the air again, because I love listening to them while I paint.
Yep. I did too. I missed them, and that was another reason why I felt this was kind of appropriately timed, was to fill the void. But yeah, this is definitely not a shot at them as far as, like, we're taking your spot. We just...
It was the hold they left in our hearts.
That's right.
Yeah.
100%.
I think, so the goal on this, we're going to talk obviously about Signar and Signar-related things, but we're also going to try to maybe bring on people from other factions and talk about them and their perspective and how they see their matches into Signar, and also talk about our matches into their particular factions. We're going to probably do a bi-weekly schedule. We all talked about it and kind of realized that to not burn out of information in 3 months, bi-weekly is probably the best way to go. We're going to start out with the three of us.
Just like my love life. So
exactly.
Bi-weekly.
Same, that's right.
Yeah. It's the same kind of periodicity, to make sure that we have the stamina.
Man, you're 40. You still get bi-weekly. Good for you. I guess we'll start with introductions. My name is Grant Ritchie. I play out of the Southern New Jersey, Philadelphia area. If for some reason you wanted to hear more of my dumbass, I also co-host Fully Boosted, also available on the Muse on Minis network. And I have no other Signar accolades other than I like to play Signar and I know how to edit a podcast. But I have been playing for about 4 years, 4.5 years now, maybe, about three of them, whatever, however you want to define competitively. I've never won anything, but, I do go to cons, I do go to tournaments, and the only other faction I own is Scorn, but I have only put them on the table in a journeyman league. Other than that, I have played Signar throughout my entire War Machine career.
Wonderful. So I'm Anthony Gibbs. I've been a Swan since Mark Tooth first dropped, I've stuck with Signar all along. It was my first faction, and I've never really played anything else. I did some Mercs for a Journeyman League, so similar to Grant. Just took them for a little spin, but most Signar players dabble in Mercs as well, so that was kind of a natural fit. As far as my background, I started playing war games with 40K, so back about 20 years ago, and then made the transition over to War Machine and Mark II. I loved it. I love the competitive aspect. I'm definitely getting more tournament games than I do casual games. Which is kind of reverse from, I think, a lot of people. I've been a regular at Nova Open and back when the East Coast Rumble was running, Mechanicon on the East Coast, and I've made the last few Captain Cons. So far, I'm having a pretty good year. I'm hoping to pick up a few more Iron Gauntlet points and hopefully be able to play in that come lock and load, so...
I think you're forgetting your most recent one. You did pretty well at Nova.
Yeah, so I got third in champions both at Nova and at Captain Con. So that got me the 8 points so far in the IG. I had a great set of games at both of those cons, and I think I was most proud of my masters at Captain Con because I've never heard of running a gauntlet like this, because first round I had Tom Gwan, then I had JVM, then I had Michael Ireland, and then I had Marc-Andre LeBlanc. So if you were to sit down and design a tougher Masters, I don't think you could do it. So it was awesome playing against all of them. It was a very, very fun time.
Coming third in that must be a pretty cool achievement then.
Well, no. I went 1-3 against them. It was the Champions Tournament that got me into it. Great games, and I learned a lot. So
cool. So hi guys, I'm Cole Westbrook. I've been playing War Machine since Mark II came out, I think, near the beginning.
So you were like 12 when you started?
Let's go with 14. still a pretty young age. I literally chose Signar because blue is my favorite color at the time. Didn't know that Haley 2 was like the most broken caster, but I looked into it, I guess. I just decided to be competitive about give or take a year and a half ago when I was living in Scotland. And I was lucky enough to be picked for the WTC for Scotland's team. And I played Legion then, but before that and now I've been playing Signar since the Gravedigger's drop. Made my favorite caster, Haley 3, become fun again for me.
So what kind of whiskey and haggis training program did they have you on for the Scottish team? I must imagine that's pretty intense.
So at the beginning of each round of WTC, we each bought each other a round of drinks, and we became pretty smashed near the end of the third or fourth round.
Haggis.
Headbutting is not only a power attack, it's also what you do to celebrate a victory. It's, yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, got it.
So I've been lucky enough to be going to Captain Con here, went to other cons in Germany and also in the UK, so I felt like I've got a pretty cool experience playing a lot of different people in a lot of different countries to help improve myself as a competitive player. And I hope again I can get enough points like Anthony was talking about, getting to the Iron Gauntlet War Machine weekend.
Yeah, because you also were in Masters at Captain Con.
So I qualified at Captain Con. I got Charles Soon round one, and it was a pretty big thrashing. And then I think I ended up going 2-2, facing Mike Ireland in the fourth round. And,
oh, nice.
On Marc-Andre LeBlanc. Mm-hmm. I got a bye round two.
The only time I ever felt like I knew a little bit about War Machine was when I was watching Cole and Mike's game, and Mike tried to assassinate Cole. Cole's playing Striker 1, Double Colossal, and Mike just didn't have an answer for it, and he tried to assassinate him the one turn. And I'm just crying in my own head, Cole, just move, just go anywhere else with Striker, and you'll be, he just does not have an answer to handle this, and you win this game, and he stayed there and then died, and I was so upset.
So I'm going to throw a preface this out that I always play Haley 3, and anything else in the faction is subpar to me.
Yeah, Cole is a Haley 3 purist, that if he's the Haley 3 or get the fuck out mentality for Signar, so most of his viewpoints are probably going to be a little skewed towards, I don't know, just play Haley 3.
Back in my day, we only had one Haley.
That's right. So yeah, so that's who we are. And like I said, we may try to add a fourth member. We may not. We'll see how this goes and how we enjoy doing it with just the three of us. But let's jump into the other thing we kind of wanted to talk about. I think we can't really start a Signar podcast without talking about the state of the faction and where Signar is. Signar's in a really fun place, a really interesting place, even though we've really fallen, I'd say, a little bit from where we were at the start of Mark III. I think we were pretty, not handedly, but we were definitely up at the top, if not the top, of the game. Stormlances were dominating the world.
Yeah, do you think that was, a big function of that was we had a fairly live theme force pretty early when a lot of other factions didn't have good ones or were still, limited in their choices. Do you think that was a big factor?
Yeah, I think the fact that we had a theme with one of the best units in the game, and that's what we already wanted to play anyway, and now we got free points for just doing exactly what we wanted to do anyway. We also had pre-nerf Haley too, but people were winning cons without her. You saw a lot of Striker 1 what else? Who else was doing strong then? I mean, I guess
it was Striker 2.
Striker 2, yeah.
In the UK, because I was playing around at that time, it was a lot of Striker 1, Haley 2, and Nemo 3. Because Jarl was still playing around that time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he was doing a lot of Nemo 3, Haley 3.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Or Haley 2, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, then we kind of transitioned towards a little heavy metal came out, and obviously that theme was also fantastic. Mm-hmm. And our Warjacks are good. Chargers are probably one of the best lights in the game, and I think that also helped keep us at the top. And then people started transitioning, and the answers for Stormlances started coming out, and we kind of had to head towards the heavy metal world. And then I don't know exactly what happened. What happened there? Was it just wasn't enough?
I don't know if we we did get toned down on a lot of different patches and updates with the Stormlances, with Haley 2. We also received some benefits with Cray or with the new themes back in September. But I don't think we've fallen as far. I think other factions have just gotten toned up to where we are.
Sure.
Yeah. And so we're no longer on this island of we're going to be awesome alone. Now everyone's kind of awesome with us, and it's kind of hard sharing that spotlight as a Signar player, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think it wasn't so much toning down us. I mean, you can talk about Haley 2 getting a little snipped down. I think that definitely jumbled up some pairs that people were very comfortable with. Also, there were a couple of big changes. If you remember, Kane 3 had a pretty big heyday for a while he was on ADR. But then you get Old Witch 2 and 3 come out, and suddenly everybody's a little more hesitant to put him down the board, because I think suddenly the reduced range makes him more challenging to play. You might still be able to play through it.
Well, I think another thing that happened was a lot of the themes, you saw the Rhett one, the Convergence, not that Convergence is super popular everywhere, you saw a lot of Shield Guards really come out, so a lot of the gunline style lists that we were running, like the Haley 2, Hurricane, Strider, Reliant, well, that didn't fly after after that, because it was everything was a gun, and there were Shield Guards and everywhere, and that just kind of became a little bit of an issue. So we had to go back to the drawing board. Of course, then Gravediggers came out, which is just where Haley 3 was meant
shines
to be.
Yeah.
But also, not just Haley 3 alone. I know we've been testing Siege 2 with it as well here. I know the Canadians up north really love Siege 2. And so we have a decent amount of caches that want to run Gravediggers, and Gravediggers just really gives us that void, because after Stormlances, no one wants to take them. We're usually doing double heavy metal, and now we have a really great infantry list that just pairs well with what else we have.
Mm-hmm. So I know that when you raise this topic of where is the faction competitively, one of the real keys in my mind is that we have four very live theme forces. I would not be ashamed to take a pairing of any two of our theme forces to any event, as long as they're well constructed. And when you combine that with, a stable of, let's say, four to a half dozen casters that can really compete at the highest tier, I think that's a really, really good sign. And, when Sons of the Tempest is considered your worst theme force, I think you're in a pretty good spot. Because I actually pretty like that quite a bit.
Yeah, I haven't put that on the table a ton yet, but I definitely think it is much better than its first iteration. And I would 100% agree with you that I believe we have four extremely strong theme forces. Unless, just side note, if for them to totally screw us in ADR with the way they want to go with themes, they'd have to just take a bunch of casters that don't want to play in either
in theme. The themes. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's about the only way. Otherwise, I look at that and I'm like, give me any two themes and we'll make a pairing out of it, no problem.
Yeah, that CID announcement, I was like, oh, cool. So I already know what two lists is going to happen, and I just got handed what I'm going to play. Mm-hmm. I don't.
Yeah, Darius and Sons of the Tempest, right?
Yeah, buddy. For sure.
Wasn't Siege 2 on that? Right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Siege 2, Gravediggers, and Cray Heavy Metal. right?
Yeah.
Or for you, Gibbs Sons, but...
No. Actually, well, so it's Heavy Metal and Gravedigger. So Cray will be in Heavy Metal once that CID drops. I mean, right now I'm running Cray and Sons, but I've already got a version. Essentially, it keeps the Four Centurion look, but it takes three Minutemen as well. And then some support, you know, like your Arlen and your Ayana and Holton Murdoch, that sort of thing.
All right, so I sidetracked us. I want to get back to non-champions, although that list sounds fantastic. That Four Centurion is just a perfect staple. Anything else you add into that is like just gravy. But so a lot of people, when teching into Signar, are really just looking at the Nemo 3, Haley 3. And I'm going to put aside the possible changes to immunities because right now we don't know anything. You know, there's rumors that something's going to happen to Nemo 3. There's rumors, you know, we've seen one less basically impervious flesh against the E-leaps. We've seen maybe you're not going to be able to E-leap off of your own thing. Let's just take it with what it is now, and let's talk about Nemo 3, Haley 3. Obviously, we're more than that, but what about that pairing is so strong? Mm-hmm. Cole, so I'll let you... Yeah, you go, because that's your...
I'll start off with the Haley 3 side. So she's a cloud wall that is not just a cloud wall, and the fact that when you tech for a cloud wall, it doesn't really work for Haley 3, because she brings a cloud wall, she brings tough trenchers, she brings a spell, a defense buff, and the fact that you can't like purify or get rid of it in a normal way. So if you can handle one of those three, you still have the other two to deal with. And so she's just so versatile and has such a heavy toolbox to use. And then you start throwing in, like, the free solos. You get, like, 16 free points of models. You have, like, Ragman for the damage buff. She can just do so much with so little. I've seen her... Like, I've had a Haley unit alone, like, one round of Colossal, and, like, still my army wipes out the rest just because she just has what the tools in the right situation to use no matter what. You jam her up, she has certain tools to take care of the melee threat, certain tools to take care of the shooting threat. But she's one of those caches that takes, like, a lot of time to put in. So... That's why we always rely, a lot of people, I think, rely on Nemo 3 as well, because Nemo 3 just points a button, points his gun and shoots. But those lists are both scary combined.
Yeah. So the subtleties of Nemo, I think, are very similar to what people are comfortable playing in Mark 2. So there was a lot of Stormwall play in Mark 2, and so people are used to thinking about, okay, putting pods down and leaping off of them, running up Storm Lances and leaping off of them, using Fireflies. And so I think adjusting to Nemo 3 and Mark 3 was a very natural progression for a lot of good Signar players. And I can definitely see why he's coming into his own. I think it's smart for the meta to plan for this pair, because I think if you have the tools to deal with a Nemo 3, Haley 3 pair, you have a fairly well-rounded shot into a lot of different Signar lists. If you can handle leaps, if you can handle a lot of Jackson battle engines, if you can handle Haley's you know, laundry list of problems that she causes to others, I think that means you have a very solid pair. So I think it's a good mental exercise for others to do.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that, especially like you were saying, if you have an answer into Nemo 3, you're probably pretty good into most other Storm Division lists.
Right.
Maybe like a Strike or two, Double Lance being maybe the exception, but...
Yeah, the only one I could really think that plays differently is like a Striker 1, where you're doing a heavy armor skew, and that may take different tools. But in general, if you can handle a bunch of Fireflies and Storm Striders, you can probably handle some, you know, Storm Lances and a unit of Storm Blades. They're not going to cause you problems.
Now, Cole, I mean, you've been basically strictly playing Haley 3, I think, since Gravediggers came out, right?
Yeah, I've been playing her since September, 90% probably.
So I want to jump back to her for a second. I mean, and if you check out the Tactical Tips podcast, they covered her extremely well, so I don't want to jump off that too much, but I don't know, we couldn't really be a Signar podcast without really talking about her. Why is she, I know we talked about why she's strong, but why is she so hard to, is it just because she's so toolboxy and has so many answers in, like, she has an answer into so many matchups? Like, is she the Mark III, Haley II?
I would think so. When I come up to a table and I see your opponent's pairing, there's like, I have not really had that feeling of, oh shit, this one of their lists screws me over. I haven't had that feeling yet. I feel majority of the games she plays into are fair at most. Like, it's not going to be like, oh, he's definitely going to beat me or I'm definitely going to beat him. It's I can play this matchup no matter like how bad I feel it is. Mm-hmm. There's always something she can do, and it's just, I think it's unique in Signar, because like if you drop Nemo 3 into the wrong matchup, like for example Kruger 2, you're all of a sudden like, there's nothing I can do. Where she has an out for almost everything that's in the meta right now.
So what would you say as a Signar player are her tough matches? Like, what are the things specifically, like as far as boogeymen of the meta right now that she does not want to see?
Like a boogeyman?
Yeah, for her. I mean, who does she not want to see?
I would probably, so heavy armor like Amon 5 heavies or all heavy armor build, I would think would probably be her most downfall. Ostra, Amon, Karchev are some of the heavy jackcasters that have mobility that can get into her.
So like Gatsby 3 with 9 slayers is actually probably an uphill.
I would think so. I haven't actually had a time. I haven't actually found someone to play that matchup with. That's one of the ones I'm really keen on trying. I think it would be bad for Haley, but I want to see it before I play it.
I'm not sure. I mean, I played against an Amon list today that had only 4 heavies, true, but then it had a bunch of dervishes, which honestly are perhaps better against Gravediggers in how deep they can go. And the synergy that Amon has means even with a defense buff, they're hitting anyway once he gets the synergy train rolling. And I think one of the things I really want to see is, can the Gatsby 3 list handle the attrition considering, you know, Mat 7, you're often needing 8s to hit, and then you've got tough. And in terms of positioning and focus efficiency, I'm imagining that list getting bogged down in the trencher wall and just getting ground down turn after turn. But I'm not sure exactly how that attrition resolves, but I'm not sure that it's just a one-sided match.
Now, Grant, I don't know if you want to talk about it, but you took Haley to a Steamroller recently, and I think you found out what her biggest weakness is, if you want to talk about that.
Her biggest weakness is the person driving her.
The clock.
Yeah, well, that as a factor of the person driving her. I mean, the biggest problem with her, and everybody has said this already, but I mean, she there's so many moving pieces, there's so many things going on in that list that every activation is important, everything matters, and everything chews up clock. The things that you would do in a normal list, that in her list, everything takes, you know, 2 to 3 to 5 extra minutes per turn. Walking up, doing your cloud wall, getting your spacing right, doing your repos, bringing everything up behind, taking your shots, rinse and repeat. Like, not in that order, obviously, but all of those things have to happen. The Haleys have to go. Like, there's so many activations, there's so many things. She eats clock, and you have to be able to play her without thinking and almost on autopilot, with being able to just go, these models go here, I do this, next. And that takes, I think, more reps than possibly any other caster in the game. Because on top of the amount of models you have a warcaster unit who is all capable of doing things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, present Haley's not necessarily wanting to do a ton of stuff except probably upkeep the Echoes, upkeep Tax Supremacy, and cast Flux. But she's got other things she could do. She's got Dominate. She could cast Revive. She's got Repudiate. So there's 3 activations just right there within your warcaster. It's a very difficult list to play, and the biggest challenge is being able to play a game. I mean, Gibbs, you played it recently, right? You clocked.
Yeah, this was actually my first game with Haley 3. So, knowing the steep learning curve, I actually put off learning her until until I kind of found a natural place for her in my pair. Because as long as I wasn't quite sure what she brought to my pair that I didn't have, I couldn't justify, you know, just sinking the few hundred games that I would need into a new caster, considering that I always had something else to test. And so, and the nice thing is in the group chat, we've been chatting a lot about tactics, and I got to see you and Cole play Haley 3. I got to hear the Tactical Tips podcast, and so I've really started wrapping my head around the value that she brings over and above what anybody else in the faction can bring. And so I think that's what convinced me to finally try it. And like a champ, I clocked my first game.
Sure. As any good but, Haley 3 player does.
That's the initiate challenge.
Exactly. And it was quite close, and what I just focused on was the not taking time to think, but rather just thinking as I'm doing my activations. Yep. You know, always be thinking of the next move as I'm completing the one that I'm doing. And it helped, and I can see where you can build the proficiency, but even from a longtime Signar player, it was still very, very difficult to get everything in time.
Yeah, I mean, I was playing Gravediggers previously with other casters, and I knew I didn't have to sit there and look at the stats of the models, look at the abilities.
Right.
It didn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know all the stats.
Yeah.
I know, I know the basic tactics that I'm going to use. I know my basic positioning. But even so, like, there were a few complications. For instance, this was against Amon, and so I knew going into it that I wanted to take out Choir, and I actually extended pretty far with Long Gunners, Express Teams, and even Maxwell Finn got a little busy with it, just to take out Choir first turn, early in the engagement, so that he only had two Choir guys left after my first meaningful turn. And so that required some thinking of how not to get in a terrible position where dervishes run through my line. So there was some finesse there that required some thinking time. But then a lot of it was just trying to go through that 8 jacks worth of boxes with all the pieces and just doing, you know, 40 dudes worth of activation.
Yep. So there's really, while we're talking about her, there's two versions of the list that are pretty prominent right now. There's the ones with the long gunners and the trencher infantry, all the solos. And then, Cole, you have put on the table the other version, which consists of what? What are the differences?
So the difference is, and this is a list that Tong Guan took to OTC, and that also Jake Wilshop won at BonesCon. It has Haley 3, Thorn, and Ironclad, Alexis, Sinnoh, and Risen, and Min Commandos UA with some Scattergunners in there. And so the main difference is your Ion and Holt and Alexis, Sinnoh. And those two really like define how Haley 3 plays and how she is paired in the process.
Mm-hmm.
What are the advantages of that list that you found versus the list that most people, the list that's kind of made her popular, you know, the standard long gunner list, I'll call it.
There's still long gunners in both, though, Grant.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, then the one with Alexia.
Alexia.
Yeah.
It's like the Express Teams and no Express Teams. But the difference is, like, casters like Old Witch 2 and Kruger 2 have, like, Windstorm. It's more playable into it because I don't have to rely on guns. So it's less reliant on guns, but there's still a heavy gun presence there. Mm-hmm. Where you can do quantity and quality of shooting, quantity and quality of melee. It just has they both have everything. This one is more down the road, and it's hard for you to figure out how that is as your opponent. Like, how do I actually play into this?
Yeah, and the version I played today was similar in that it had Alexia, but instead of the commandos, I had the express teams and a couple other tweaks. But Alexia also gives a great addition in that she spawns, you know, as long as you're not doing something else with her, just having a free weapon master solo to go wreak havoc on the opponent is great.
Yeah.
You know, having her generate 3 or 4 of those in the course of a game is just something else. It's like the Echoes. It's just another free model that suddenly your opponent has to deal with. And usually when people go into planning for Haley 3, they're thinking, okay, I use these attacks for, you know, the Trencher Infantry, and I try to use these attacks on Thorn. But, I mean, they have to spend a lot of quality attacks on things that are trivial to create or to put back up, which is really, really nasty.
Yeah, free Thrall, right? That costs you nothing. You got it from a free Risen that you got when a Trencher didn't tough.
And, yeah.
Right? So I have yet to put that list on the table. I've kind of put Haley 3 to the side for now, at least till after the Sioux. I want to go up there with something that I'm comfortable with playing for the time being. I just was not going to get enough reps in the time to be able to be a competent Haley 3 player. So I chose to just kind of shelf her. But I was toying around with something like Alexia with Siege 2 in a Storm Division, where instead of having to lead with my Storm Blades and then backed up by the Lances, I could throw the Risen out there. And, you know, not that they're hard to deal with, but it's something that's got to get dealt with while she pops out, you know, more from other things. And then just Weapon Master Thralls running to go contest flags or go kill things.
Yeah, putting Fury on them and getting their attacks before then burning them for Alexia seems pretty good, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. So as a
whole in the state of the faction, then, when a caster you have that you usually people want to beat using the clock, I feel pretty happy with what I have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's move on. Let's talk about some of the other pretty popular competitive casters. I mean, we can talk a little about Nemo 3, although there's not as many nuances there. I mean, there are once you really get into it, but I mean, he's pretty point and click, I think, as far as, you know, I'm going to alpha and kill all the things that matter, and you probably don't have enough stuff left afterwards to deal with it, or I'm just going to throw boosted E-leaps into your caster and you're going to die on turn two or three.
Yeah. I mean, one of the big parts with Nemo is it's so hard to keep your pieces safe.
Yes.
So, you know, the types of places that you feel safe, like behind a building, aren't safe when you're within four of where they can run something to and leap off of it. And that suddenly creates a lot of difficulties for a lot of lists, because everybody has the way that they're comfortable keeping their caster and key support and key glass cannon damage dealers safe. And he just upends that traditional relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. And I think that's one of the big points, is that a lot of times a lot of the casters that want to come and do anything just can't, because they will die.
Yeah, it keeps them very back very far, which makes it hard for them to be relevant.
Yep. So we talked a little. Let's have either of you spent a little much time with Siege 2?
I played him at a Steamroller Iron Man style, and I found him. It was a Champions event, so I had him in Cray as my pair.
Sure. So let's talk a little bit about Siege 2. He's gaining a lot of popularity. He's kind of becoming, not that Striker 2 has fallen a ton out of favor, but he's kind of becoming the Striker 2 of Mark 3 for us. He obviously has been being played generally in Gravediggers. Couple variations of lists. There's a couple that are taking long gunners, and then infantry and commandos, and then there's a couple that are kind of just max commandos with all of the scatter gunners, and then infantry with a UA, solos to, you know, the standard solos, Ian and Holt, Ragman, Trenchbusters, and Cole, you've been talking a little bit about Nis with him, which I know it hasn't become super popular yet, but if you want to talk about them for a second, I really like the theory of them with him.
So when I went to the Steamroller, I decided to take, I think it was like Max Nis Hunters, Men Infantry, and Max Long Gunners. So I had the Long Gunners for the shooting threat, and I wanted the Nis Hunters because he has Fury. In Signar, we usually don't have a damage buff, so I wanted to really see how far I can push the limits of power 12 Weapon Master attacks, that threat 14 inches with Siege's feet.
How did that work?
I enjoyed it quite well. Mm-hmm. Round one was against a Helena pair who had a lot of Dawn Guards, and so I outthreaded him by quite a lot. Mm-hmm. So that was super nice to like push him back. And then actually when I did go in, I have Assault because mm-hmm. of Murdoch. So I was able to flick some off and then redirect charge attacks and kill off a decent amount.
Nice.
Another game I actually faced a mirror match of Signar and Secret Tech. They have Hunter. So they
so they
ignore the
nothing.
Dig in and the cover, and they're actually able to do good work there. And the fourth game, they were kind of sad because Colgrim had a cloud wall. And so I really did enjoy them, and they did have decent play. I think they are viable. It's just you miss out on a free card.
You do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to be willing to be okay with two cards in that list, mm-hmm. which a lot of times is fine. But and like the list I've built, it means I lose like something like Ian and Holt. And not that he necessarily needs it, but having harm and magic weapons is a big bonus for him. So what do you feel the strengths of his particular either... The list doesn't matter. It's for the most part, it's a list that has a little bit of range presence, but ideally wants to crash into melee using his feet as threat extension, or if it has to, the defense buff. So, Cole, what do you think the strengths of the Siege 2 lists are?
So I think it has a good defensive tech with his feet. Again, it has we don't have a lot of threat projection in Signar. We have usually Crave for our Jack, so Siege 2 gives us a good threat projection in melee. And Fury as a damage buff, which Signar is hard. Mm-hmm. I usually see like Circle or Scorn get like a +6 swing, and I'm like, I want that.
Yeah. Oh man, and I tell you what, I feel bad for Striker 3 because I've been just trying to make him work for so long.
Me too.
And Siege 2 comes along and just casually just outshines him.
It's so messed up because I was talking about it. Gravediggers came out, and I was like, this is the perfect place for Striker 3. He's going to be fucking amazing in this list, and I have yet to see a list that I like. I have yet to put a list down in more room that I didn't just delete immediately after. Like, no, that's trash. Get rid of that.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? Desperate pace. It's a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Third extension, it's also a thing.
So what I really like about him that I didn't like at first, when I first looked, I looked at his feet, and I was just like, ugh, like that, meh. Like, I didn't love the feat, but the more I sat there and looked at his card when he came out, and I was like, man, having the versatility of a feat that can either just be used offensively for threat extension or to crash in, back up a little, or just to go, oh, you've got guns? Okay, I'm just going to dig my whole army in and be +4 defense, and then I'm going to come at you next turn.
Yeah.
Is a really big deal, and I found that when I played him that I really liked the versatility of his feat, and that people have to respect that. Also, he has a caster that has a ridiculous personal threat even after the jump charge jump change, which obviously everybody knew is how it was supposed to work to begin with, but he still threats what, 15 inches non-linear?
Right. I think it's... is it 15 or 13?
Might be 13. I'm assuming if he had his feet, so he can jump 5, he's speed 5, he can...
it's 13.
Feet for 3 is 8. Yeah, 11, 13, you're right. But still,
which is, 13... It's a very respectable distance.
Right, and non-linear, I think, is a big deal, that he can come from around a building where he was just saving...
No. If you walk 5, you jump 5, you feet for 3, and then you have a 2-inch reach, that's 15-inch.
Yeah, because he can't charge. Yeah, because he can't charge when he jumps, but he can go 5-5-3. Yes, it is 15. Fucking Cole.
I don't play Siege. I'm sorry.
Math is hard.
Also with Ram, so he auto knocks down and has Fury on a PAL 15. I mean, he himself can just sit in his zone, put his dick on the table, and be like, "Go ahead, send something in this zone. Like, I dare you."
Yeah, I've had that theory with Striker 3 about having Fury on him to get ready for, you know, to threaten personal threat, but I've never had it work that Fury actually... Usually it's not focus efficient to cast it on the turn you're going in.
Sure.
And if you have Fury on you in preparation, it's like, here's a -1 defense to my caster. Like, I'm not sure that it's... I don't know. It's a good threat, but I haven't found it personally usually Fury just unlocks the army, not so much him.
But. Sure, no, totally agree. But to have in your back pocket, even for late game.
Hey, yeah, I mean, if you need it, and it's better to have it and not
and
need
he
it.
He has a deceptive amount of control. I mean, battering ram just when someone thinks they're safe by running a jack just, you know, 2 inches into the zone, and you roll up and throw a battering ram at them, and they're like, oh, well, shit, I thought I had that zone covered. Razor wall can keep some of the infantry alive. And then again, on the feet, getting bulldoze on his jacks, not a huge deal because he's not taking a big battle group. It's usually something like Triumph Hunter, Triumph Ironclad. I think the Canadians are really high on a list that runs triple Ironclad, they may get a little more use out of it than the list that we're seeing down here.
So the thinking is to make use of like the Vengeance move.
I think the Vengeance move and that you're the cheap
and
Fury on cheap jacks, right? So we're still being backed up with the Trenchers.
Okay.
So let's talk about some of the other casters. Gibbs, you've been playing a lot of Kray, mm-hmm. and he's pretty popular after his rework. So do you want to talk about some of his strengths and weaknesses?
Sure, absolutely. So Kray, I think he's really come into his own. So, funny enough, even after he got rebalanced as part of the Gravedigger CID, you didn't really see him a whole lot because I think no one was quite sure exactly where he fit into a pair and exactly what they wanted to rely on him to do. Because he has the great ability to threat extend heavies. Making them cav is wonderful. But, you know, he's still just a focus 6. And so if you just think that he's going to spam Ironclads, it's not quite like Gatsby 3 in Black Industries. It just doesn't work quite as well with his kit. And then, you know, people that remember Mark II would sometimes build a shooty list with him and work on the ability to kite around and really be hard to pin down with a bunch of shooting jacks. But the way Mark III goes, and particularly since Steamroller 2017, it's really hard to not be present and really upfront in a zone right now. You can't play the dance around them list and expect to not be put into very bad scenario pressure. So what I've been running, I really was inspired by the champions in that I had to put together a pair, and I had Maddox, and I didn't know who my other was going to be. So I said, okay, I'm going to make Kray work. And so that's when I came up with the Four Centurion Sons of the Tempest Kray look, which I really, really like, because the Sons of the Tempest give him the magic weapons that you don't want to spend your Centurion attacks on if you don't have to. So to get rid of, like, Gremlin Swarms, to take care of Machine Wraiths, little things like that. You don't want to spend a whole jack to go deal with something like that. It's really inefficient. And with the, you know, Grimkin being so strong in a champion's format, that was a big consideration. Additionally, being able to threaten clouds with the Black 13th and just being able to have a few things just to make it difficult for someone to be completely happy behind one or two clouds was also key. And it turns out that four Centurions with reposition 5 is and his threat extension is just really good. It can get overwhelmed if you go up against a list that has 8 to 10 heavies, because suddenly you have to outplay them to the extent of taking 2 heavies for every one of yours. More than that, you have to get like 2.5 heavies for every one of yours, and that's very, very hard. The great things that Kray provides is the versatility of positioning. You can play a very, very good positioning game with him because of the reposition. You can also, because he has countermeasures and admonition, you can throw a wrench in both ranged or melee lists, countermeasures lets you jam up a Centurion in a very uncomfortable place against certain lists. They don't want to see it. The admonition, you know, can really make trading a lot more favorable against a melee-type list. He's really strong into things with a lot of infantry that rely on infantry to kill heavies, because infantry that don't get to charge are often very sad.
Yeah,
that's very sad infantry.
Yeah, and so if you go up against, like, a Dark Host, you know, suddenly, if they don't have a way to turn around your Jack, you know, if they're not playing Scabrous or something like that, it's really hard, because even if they do walk up to you, okay, POW 11 or 13 Weapon Masters, it's still not the...
Yeah, off 8, like,
man. Yeah, still off 10 or 8, which is not too good, if you can only get a couple infantry on you. The ability, you know, with impact attacks... a shield and a spear and good use of focus, you can actually clear a lot of infantry with four jacks that can then reposition back and be annoying.
Yeah. I loved that list from the moment you showed it to me and I saw it. I was like, never thought about four Centurions with him, but a lot of people I think were going two, but I never thought about pushing to four. But when I saw that on the table, I was like, this list is awesome. It's great.
Yeah, I think that comes from my days of playing 40K. So I used to play Imperial Guard, and I used to love like the tank companies and things like that. And I found that, often what's people can handle one or two elements if you have it redundant enough without giving up. You don't want to make your list just one-dimensional, right? Because then you're crippling your own options. But if you have enough redundancy of an element that's hard to deal with, like polarity field, and this is why some things like stealth spam work really well, armor skews where it's just a lot of boxes, you know, it's just a redundancy of an element that's complicated to deal with or where the tools to deal with it aren't readily available. And I think that's why it can be really, really powerful in certain matchups. And it gives you a very good idea in list selection what your opponent's going to have to try to think about, which sometimes is an advantage in itself.
And one of the things I think you didn't hit on was that you also throw in Ragman, Falk, and Strangeways. and that's a really big...
Indiana and Holt.
I am in Holt now, yeah, but I was thinking of the first iteration of the list.
Original,
but I mean, you know, the Strangeways, Falk, Ragman combo in and of itself is, you know, you get a +4 swing right there just by giving a Centurion magic weapons and keeping Ragman behind him.
So having a +4 swing, that's not normal in Signar. I'm really happy that we can actually kind of do that now. Even though that we had to pull a lot of strings to do it, mm-hmm. I still feel really happy that we can do it.
Well, I mean, you're kind of only in Sons of the... At this point with the list you're running now, you're only in Sons of the Tempest because you can get a Squire and take a Merc unit and solo and then still get the Black 13th, right? Like, there's...
Yes. So a lot of... one of the things that people overlook about that list is the Black 13th. And they do so much work in that list. And everybody says, okay, so you have a little bit of shooting. Yeah, that's nice. You know, they're just helping you enable the feat. No. When you put some damage buffs up, these guys go ham on things. So one of the greatest moments of Captain Khan, I was playing Trish, and Trish is wonderful. And, she has this nasty Zadesh 2 list, which, is kind of what you'd expect with double turtles and just a lot of scorned beef. And there was this moment of kind of like a stunned awe around the table when she jammed her turtles down my throat, and the Black 13th with a little bit of buff support was able to basically just solo a turtle.
That's crazy.
And they were just like, yeah, Pistolier, we're good. We can just do this. And everybody was like, what? That can happen. And it turns out that if you get Falk and Ragman near, the Black 13th with Gunfighter and Pistolier do an enormous amount of damage. They easily take a heavy. Even in against lists like I've been practicing this that Kray list into the Nine Slayer Black Industries Gatsby 2. And even with Carapace, that's okay. They still take a Slayer. If you can get your damage buffs, if you're playing Catcher's Mitt and they come into you, you still take a Slayer with the Black 13th. And often that's a little startling to your opponents.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah. They think jamming Gun Mages is good.
Now, Grant, I've also seen you've been trying out a list of your own with Siege, right? Siege 1?
Yeah, well, yeah, and I've talked about this on my cast a lot. I've been playing.
Hey, Siege this is your 1. Cast too.
No, I mean on the other. Like, I mean, everyone's heard me talk about Siege 1 a billion times. Yeah, I've been playing a lot of Siege 1. I thought in the meta that we were previously in, and probably even still now. I mean, he was our only answer to not our only. There's other options. A lot of people played Nemo 3 or Haley 2 into Ghostly, but Haley 3, excuse me. But I thought he was one of our better options into Ghost Fleet because Explosivo in and of itself was one of our only ranged RFPs, and that was such a big deal into that list. But it also was Magic Weapons, which was another thing that was really nice to have. Then the rework to Triumph came out, and him having Magic Weapon and True Sight and getting two boosted 15s, I just always felt that combo was pretty perfect. I mean, and Siege himself, putting Ground Pounder on him. I was playing my buddy Ryan, and he was playing Axis with all the dudes into my Siege list, and he's like, I mean, you have Explosivo, but how bad's it gonna be? And then I Explosivo'd Siege and dropped a Ground Pounder, and like he lost like eight guys, and they all went into his RFP file, and he was like, oh fuck, this is so much worse. And then I juggled it over to a Stormstrider, you know, or a Charger, and killed two more. It was like, it was just so bad. I like Siege right now. I think I don't like the old builds of the, you know, although you could definitely still play him in Sons of the Tempest with Gun Mages. I think that would still be just fine. I really love Chargers with him, and I really am loving the Stormstriders with him. They can easily get screwed on his feed turn because lightning generators are musts, not can.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can kind of screw yourself if you don't pay attention to where things are and do the shots in the wrong place. But man, can that list just mulch stuff.
So, question with that: Have you tried him in Sun since Falk came out?
I haven't,
and have you tried to do like the debuff brigade of Arlen, Ragman, Ayana, and Holt with Murdoch and Falk?
Nope.
Because what I've found with Siege is that his feat makes it seem like he can handle armor, but because it is a single turn, often you can run out of steam in the long game attrition.
Yeah.
And I think so, having that available as well, considering he can Explosivo to get magic weapons, and I think stacking all those magical and damage buffs could be very powerful. I haven't played it. It's just a hunch.
No, it's a good theory. I have not played that either. But shit, Explosivo on himself, if you could land...
if you can land Falk,
you know, now he's throwing 18s on feet turn. He's going to be dice plus 8 against most things.
Yeah.
Most things don't want to see that. His feet can kind of be a trap into armor, and I think a lot of people thought that in Mark 2. We're like, oh, you need to crack armor, just play Siege. And it was like, well, you only get one dice roll. So if you spike low against that arm 20 jack, you blew your feet to do 4 points of damage. And... I think his feat can be a trap, but I think his feat is amazing into medium infantry.
Oh, sure. But I'm thinking, especially since Ground Pounder ignores the targeted melee bonus, so I could imagine, you know, Ragman and Falk and the Black 13th and Gunfighter, suddenly you can get situations where... you can get a lot of damage and not rely on feet... alone for your armor cracking. I mean, let that get the party started.
Yep.
I don't know. I haven't played it. It's just an intriguing idea.
No, it's a good idea. I mean, I've been messing around with, like, Triumph, Three Chargers, Double Storm Strider, and that in itself can generally do enough work from far enough that I don't have to feet. I can hold my feet, which makes a lot of casters have to play
Assassination
honest.
Threat.
Yeah,
because
they just can't. Because, I mean, he has a 19-inch, like, almost like the Kane 2. Like, if you walk in here and I have my feet, your 2 camp is not going to save you.
Right.
I've actually made some changes into that with the prevalence of the cloud walls, and I've actually dropped my a Firefly to get Linus and Adrea in there. So they give me 2 things, one of which would be into Hordes, or actually into War Machine as well, Applied Knowledge on Siege's Ground Pounder.
Could be
really clutch on feet turn. Siege tends to take a bunch of damage. A D3 heal isn't amazing, but it's not awful. And then obviously the Windburst, being able to run one of my Fireflies into, say, the middle of a cloud and then throw Windburst on it. And now my Striders, between that and Mage Sight, now I can see right through to everything important.
Sure, but if you're running Suns, you don't have to worry about clouds at
all.
Also true.
Yeah, and I think that's why Siege 1, I think you saw that at ATC. I think you saw several people running him there. That's something I think maybe post Southern Ontario Open I might mess around with. He's not super popular. I think maybe Suns, as that gains some popularity, you may see some more of him. I still am of the mindset that with Manowars and Ogryn coming out, I think he still
his
is going to have
may
a place. I think he still has a really good place in this meta. And also, still
don't
want
forget
ranged
the
RFP.
Chosen.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't forget Chosen of Everblight. That's going to be a depending on where their final stats land. With excessive healing, you want to be able to one shot them. You don't want to do plink and plunk damage.
Yep,
well, Gravediggers can do plink and plunk because we got express teams.
Yes, they can. And also, you've got the laser beams if you want to combine range attacks with the long gunners, right?
Do you guys think, because we don't see a lot of Striker 1, and a lot of the problem with people with the Stormlance was that people had the answers for them. Do you think the list that was popular at the beginning of Mark 3, like Striker 1 with, say, a Hurricane and then double Lances, could you see that being relevant again, or is there just too many things? Does that not answer enough questions for us?
So I think outside of Nemo 3 and Haley 3, because those are only, in my opinion, our only 2 casters that ask a question, I think the rest of our casters more answer questions than anything. We can use those answers to tailor. So I think Striker 1 at one point did ask a question, but the way the meta shift and all these new tools that have come out, he just doesn't ask the same question. He more answers things now.
So what, in terms of, like, what are you thinking changed that makes the meta better able to handle Striker 1?
So
I'm just not thinking of anything.
Minions in the latest CID with Will Work for Food, they can, a lot of factions, like even now Signar has an option to get a +6 swing. When Grimkin came out, the Child with her, like, +7 and Wraithbane can still, like, one round a Stormwall.
Yeah, okay.
Wraithbane is certainly a problem, and I do tend to agree with you, Cole, about the... what was the first point you made? I'm sorry, I was trying to transition. We definitely... I do feel that we have become more of a answer faction than we did to have of a question faction. I think, again, with the exception of Haley 3, Nemo 3, the rest of us is, okay, like, why am I taking Siege 1? I'm not presenting anything difficult for you. It's, I need to be able to... I need magic weapons, I need RFP, and I want a gun line that will reliably kill medium armor. Okay, great.
I think that's what, I mean, that's kind of why I've been really focused on kind of testing out some new lists that kind of break the mold, like the Four Centurion Cray list, because I want to get to that place where we're asking a question again. And I think, it's a really good sign when after a tournament, like, your opponents are like, oh crap, I don't even know what I would drop into that. Like, that's kind of a reaction you want to get with lists that ask a hard question.
Dude, people and so, at CaptainCon that I didn't even know were talking about your Cray list. Like, dude, if that becomes a thing, like, I don't, what do I do? What do I do to that? Like,
yeah, luckily, nobody knows who I am, so it's...
They will now, buddy.
Sure.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut
you off. No. But the other, so the other thing that you guys know I've been really focusing my mental energy on is I'm a longtime Sloan player. I took Sloan to ATC. I've played her a lot. In Mar 2, she and Haley 2 were my two most played casters. And so recently I've been toying around with a heavy metal list with her that does 5 Hunters and 5 Minutemen. And then with Arlen, Squire, and Ayanan Holt with Murdoch. And this list has been really, really surprising me in terms of how much more firepower it makes me feel like I have. And how many more tools with the non-linear threat of the Minutemen. And it forces me to play a better scenario game because Minutemen want to be close anyway. But this is one of those lists that I feel have the potential of being that, oh crap, do I have an answer for this? You know, it is 27 quality shots on feet turned, and most lists cannot handle 27 quality shots on feet turned. And, you know, and I have, it's one of those lists that, you know, unless they have some really, really good tech like Carapace, it just takes them off the board. And you just table a whole army. And, you know, and so when I first started toying around with it, everybody said, well, you don't have Shadowfires in there. I'm like, I'm not going for a caster kill. I'm just going to blow their army off. Yeah.
It's hilarious to watch.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, I think there are opportunities to get back to asking questions. I think one of the strengths of our faction is that we can have well-rounded lists that answer a lot of things. And so I think there's always the temptation to build that way. And it rewards good players who build those types of lists. But I tell you what, I mean, there's still some gold to be mined in terms of making a list where everybody's like, whoa, I don't know that I want to face that. Like, I don't even know what I'd drop.
I think as long as I've known you, you've always been really good at making lists that ask questions. I think your original Sloan list did that, where you didn't take a 9-hunter approach. You were like, well, okay, then what happens when they get in my face? So you went 4 hunters, double Stormlances. And now you had that answer to what a lot of people were bringing to deal with Sloan. You did that with your Stormstrider Sloan list as well. And yeah, so I think there is definitely something there. I think there's just got to be some outside the box thinking. I'm not great at that, so I'll probably just piggyback off of yours. So.
See, but every time I make a second list to go with Haley 3, I always come back to the question of why am I not just playing Nemo 3? Mm-hmm. And I think that is a problem that we had with Haley 2, where we're just having there's a crutch in the faction that just makes you so, I don't say blinded or short-sighted, but it's just hard to, like, want to get off that, even though I don't like Nemo 3, like, personally in terms of what he does, I put him in all my pairings because everyone else is afraid of him, but he's also just that good in what he can do, and so I don't know if what we build is better than what we can get with Nemo 3 that he just does without actually having to think.
Sure. But like Gibbs said, there's going to be a lot of people are teching for those things right now. Everybody's thinking about, when they look at our faction, everybody's thinking, all right, I need to be able to play into Haley 3 and Nemo 3. And I'm not saying everybody has just a simple answer they come up with, but you know that's what everybody's thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a reason I myself don't like to take that the most popular pairs. I don't want to be... have the lists that are being teched against.
Yeah, I mean, you have to have a reason. So the power casters are power for a reason. You know, they do it for a very good player. They offer an edge just because they're a bit on the leading edge of the power curve. But it's not such an advantage that you can't overcome that by smart application of other tools. And so I really like Sloan because she is sort of orthogonal to some of the defenses that people are used to using. Cloud walls, you know, everybody's used to using cloud walls to really shut down a lot of shooting. And the answers, you know, quote, answers to cloud walls is like Linus and Andrea can get rid of like a little bit of cloud, but it can't, you know, it can poke a hole in it, but it's not an answer in terms of taking away the whole effectiveness. You know, Sloan just takes away the whole effectiveness. Like, you might as well not even put him down.
Yep. Don't even bother.
Yeah. And stealth, like, you might as well not cast Occultation. Save your fury. You know, it's fine. You know, high defense. I mean, you can get defense up high enough. Haley 3 is an example. You can get defense high enough that it matters to Sloan's list. But there really only are a couple lists that can get defense that high. So that's why I particularly like her, because the answers that people are used to bringing suddenly aren't as effective as they're used to having them be. And I think as long as you're meta aware and know what you may be facing, you can explore some options like that. You know, and it's not being a snowflake just because you want to just play some oddball list and have fun. There's a time and a place for that. It's that if you're aware of the meta, you don't have to follow the meta.
Right.
You just have reasons for why you deviate from it.
Yep. I mean, and that being said, Cole, you have a lot of reps with Haley 3. There's nothing wrong with bringing Haley 3. You're a good Haley 3 player. You will win games with Haley 3.
Yeah.
And, you know your good and bad matchups and can probably outplay a lot of people because you know the list better than they do.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's certainly something to be said. And I know I know we're keeping some of the other casters off. We didn't talk about, say, a Striker 2. Somebody like Haley 2 is, you know, still has some game for sure, as we saw at BonesCon. Yeah. And then somebody like a Kane 2 that might be, you know, coming back a little bit in favor. Again, same reasons. Cloud Wall, Grievous Wounds, all important things. But we can save all of that, and we can dig into a lot of that later. But I think we hit on a lot of the good things that we're bringing right now to the competitive level that aren't just Haley 3 and Nemo 3. I mean, again, those are super strong choices if we choose to bring them. We are in an interesting place. Yeah. It's certainly fun that we aren't just a Haley 2 and X anymore. I know at first I was kind of bummed, but the more I thought about it and the more lists I made, the more I actually did enjoy the possibilities, because we have a deep bench of casters that are all very, very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think as a Signar player, even if you don't want to play the power pair of Haley 3 and Nemo 3, be aware and maybe get some reps in with them just so that you understand what's out there, because the mirror is a live thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just because you don't necessarily want to take, you know, the most popular answers, you know, you still got to keep your finger on the pulse of why they are very good lists, and learn from that.
Yeah, and you got to be ready to see them, because I'll tell you what, if you're bringing Siege 2 Diggers and somebody drops Nemo 3 into you, you're pretty fucked.
Yeah. Can be, yeah. It's sledding uphill.
Yeah, the Signar mirror is still pretty miserable. We can maybe dedicate a whole episode to that one. So, Cole, you got any last thoughts, buddy?
Now, I think we covered all the big topics, and I honestly think that Signar is still one of the top dogs, even with all the perceived nerfs that have come our way.
Mm-hmm.
They keep trying to knock us down, and we just keep getting back up.
Yeah.
So. All right, guys, I think that's a wrap for episode 1. Thank you both for taking the time to come on and, you know, and do this with me, because this is something I've wanted to do for a while, and I'm really excited about doing this, and we'll reconvene in 2 weeks and dig into some more topics.
And guys, if you like the cast, jump on our Facebook page and ask us some questions. You know, we definitely are open to fielding some topics from the community. What do Signar players want to hear about? So any kind of feedback like that, we'll do our best to address it.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, I mean, I have no problem spending 20 minutes every episode taking questions or dedicating a whole episode to topics if we get some requests. So Facebook page is already out there. So, you know, go out there and tell us what you want to hear about. All right. Until next time, I'm Grant.
I'm Gibbs.
I'm Cole.
And remember, fear the swan.